Hello and welcome back to another episode of Open Floor. I'm Andrew Sharp, and on the other line, Ben Golliver. What's up, man?
Not too much, Andrew. Let's fight.
It's time. We've put it off long enough. It's time to discuss our awards ballots.
Look, I need to tell the listeners, you started texting me at about, 6:45 a.m. my time, and about every 5 minutes after that, it's another text. Can we go? And I can't tell if you're excited for this conversation or if you're nervous for your funeral or what is it?
Well, look, we've been texting back and forth for a couple days now, talking trash. It's 12:30
East Coast. A couple months now, to be honest.
A couple months. It's 12:30 East Coast time, 9:30 Playa del Golliver time. And this could be like a five-hour podcast. We just have a lot to sort through. I mean, first of all, I have an official vote in the NBA awards this year. You do not. So that alone could tear the pod apart. I wouldn't blame you if you hate me for it. And that's before we get to our MVP disagreement.
Hey, guess what?
What?
Plot twist. I do have an official vote. I've been lying to you for the last month.
Come on. Really?
I do. Well, you pulled this prank on me last time when it was All-Star starting vote. You hung me out to dry on the podcast. So I have been carefully lying to you, deceiving you for the last weeks. Listeners, this is no joke. Andrew's asked me so many different times if I have a vote, and I've consistently said no. I enlisted our NBA editor, Matt Dollinger, on the prank. So he was trying to lie his way through multiple conversations with this about you. I've narrowly avoided disaster at every turn with you discovering my lies. But the fact of the matter is, Andrew, you have an official vote. I have an official vote. So everyone can rest easy. I will cancel out Andrew's terrible opinions and we can all just chill.
Yo, that is incredible. Well done. Okay. There were many different times when I broached the topic with you and felt bad about it. And first of all, I didn't even know that I had an official vote until Friday. Because, quick story, like the NBA reached out like a month ago, as you probably understand. And so they were like, would you be interested? And I'm like, of course, absolutely. Like, just let me know. And then I didn't hear back from them for a couple weeks. So I assumed that like whatever list we were supposed to be on, we didn't make. And I didn't realize that I had a vote until Friday when I started getting the like promotional emails from teams. And then I realized that I had missed an email with our official ballot on Monday. What actually happened is I was listening to a podcast with, I think it was Kevin Arnovitz and Rachel Nichols. I was driving down to Charlottesville to see my wife, and I heard them mention that there was like an email starred in their inbox. And I was like, well, shit, I didn't get an email, so maybe I don't have a vote. Anyways, long story short, we both have votes, and awesome.
The best part is that a lot of the teams who were sending out their promotional awards emails like didn't use the BCC correctly. So if you had carefully checked your emails, you would have seen me on the same chain with my email CC'd. So every time somebody did that, I was over here sweating, waiting for you to say, aha, I have the evidence that you actually are a voter. But you missed it completely, dozens of times.
Look, I did not miss it completely. That's why I hit you up again on Friday. The Wizards did not BCC, and you were in the email list. And I was like, wait a second, do you have a vote? And then you said no, and then I felt bad all over again because nobody cares more about awards than you do. So you definitely are more deserving of an awards vote than I am. So well done. I truly am impressed by how long you kept that going.
Bottom line, the 4-minute intro about this scheme is going to be more entertaining than the next 2 hours. There's no question about it.
Yeah, I mean, it's probably only interesting to us, but so it goes. All right, well, look, let's get into it then. Make your stupid Harden case.
Okay, bottom line, you're wrong about Westbrook. You're one of these casual fans who only turns into the highlight shows, only watches the final minute of games, just loves the buzzer beaters and the fantasy points. No, I'm kidding. I'm kidding. I think Westbrook is an unbelievable MVP candidate. Uh-huh. I just think that Harden has a more complete case. I usually go to this like idea of the preponderance of the evidence, right? Like I'm always trying to just make who has the least weak links in their resume. When I look at Harden, I see, obviously, unbelievable stats, stats we haven't seen since the 60s. Unbelievable triple-double numbers, not as great as Russ's, obviously, but great. I see an historic offense that right now is one of the top 10 offenses ever during the three-point era. I see a massive role. I see him making his teammates better. I see him leading the league in points created by his passing. And I also see major gaps in a few key areas. Number one, true shooting percentage. I mean, he definitely has a clear edge over Westbrook in terms of individual efficiency there. Mm-hmm. I also see a pretty big gap in terms of their record. You know, everybody's saying, oh, you know, he's a 3 seed and Westbrook's a 6 seed. Well, yes. But if you expand it out, you know, Houston's got a top 3 record in the league. Oklahoma City right now is 10th. And the same thing goes for point differential. You know, Houston's 3rd in point differential. I mean, this is not a gimmick in terms of how they're winning. Their point differential backs it up. And OKC was 11th the last time I checked. So that's a pretty wide gap. I mean, that's the difference between sort of what I would consider to be elite and, you know, better than average, good but not great when you're looking at the Thunder's team performance. I also think, you know, the nature of Harden's season has shown value all over the board. I mean, if you look at his GM, the guy entered this season, you know, Daryl Morey, on the hot seat. He's coming out as an executive of the year candidate. You look at his coach, Mike D'Antoni. Let's be honest. I mean, that guy was kind of a laughing stock there for a while. People were kind of questioning him after all the playoff failures and some ugly stints in New York and LA. He's really resuscitated. The D'Antoni brand is very strong. Real nice bounce back. He's sort of doing like the opposite of United Airlines right now.
So you're giving Harden credit for inflating the stock of Morey and D'Antoni and not vice versa.
I'm saying that value transcends just being on the court.
Yeah.
And he's absolutely carrying the most important piece. Look, the best player on a team is obviously the most important player in a franchise. Let me just finish quickly, and then I'll let you rebut.
Okay.
The last thing is, I think he's really helped role guys become the best version of themselves. I'd start with Clint Capella there, but I'd also go to, you know, everybody's favorites, Ryan Anderson and Eric Gordon, in terms of their turnarounds this season in effectiveness. And, you know, he's also really allowed Beverly to kind of fit into the natural role of where he should be. So for all of those reasons, certainly he's benefiting from the moves his GM made. Certainly he's benefiting from his coach's philosophy and the trust that D'Antoni placed in him. But Harden is the workhorse. You look at his usage rate. You look at his crazy combination of scoring and playmaking. You look at their win total. It's all happening because of him. And also the fact that he stayed healthy was big, too. So I look at consistency, durability, numbers, team impact, making his teammates better, making his organization better. And I think he has the most complete case of any of the candidates.
Okay. Fair enough. I won't deny that Harden has been just incredible this season. And he's made basketball look way easier than it ever should. And Houston has like exceeded every preseason expectation. I think even people who were bullish on the Rockets coming into this season would not have imagined a 3 seed in the West. And like you said, 3rd best record in the league right now. So
that's crazy. Like if I had told you back in September, San Antonio wins 60 games, you'd be like, oh, wow, that's really impressive. Not a shock. If I told you Washington won 50 games before their 3-9 start, you'd be like, yeah, you know, that's kind of like a best case scenario.
Uh-huh.
But when you're talking about Houston having a top 3 record in the league after last year, that seemed inconceivable. And so, you know, I you're right. They are the biggest overachievers.
Yeah. And quick follow up, though, to something you said, like in terms of Ryan Anderson and Eric Gordon and Clint Capella becoming the best version of themselves. I don't think you can entirely credit Harden for that. First of all, I think like, and in terms of his impact on D'Antoni and Daryl Morey, like I think it's more of a symbiosis with those guys. Like they each help each other, and I don't want to penalize him for the system, and I don't want to penalize him for the roster. But like I do think that while you can compare the supporting casts of Russell Westbrook and James Harden, and they look roughly about the same, it's disingenuous to say that, because like the Rockets are just built in a smarter way for the way basketball is played today, and so he has a real advantage over Russ in that respect. So that's number one. Number two, what?
Stop dancing around it, though. It sounds like you want to just say that he's a product of an awesome system, and he's just Steve Nash, basically, part two. I mean, let's just be real.
Well, he is. He's a better version of Steve Nash, and Steve Nash was an MVP. Oh. Like, no, look, Steve Nash is a Hall of Famer, and James Harden is a better, like, more unstoppable version of Steve Nash. It's not a knock to call him that. Like, he's unbelievable. He's averaging, I think... So there's some club, like he's averaging 25 and 25. I don't know. There have been so many stats thrown out in the last month of basketball Twitter that it's hard to track.
Just
everything.
To be clear, he's not averaging 25 and 25. You made that up.
No, it was some Tom Haberstroh stat, and I forget exactly what it was. But look, he's outrageous. There's no question that Harden is deserving of all the hype that he's gotten this year. And look, like if they have a playoff series against the Thunder, which obviously it looks like is going to happen, like I'm picking the Rockets. However, as far as the MVP discussion is concerned, I don't think you can choose Harden and not choose Kawhi. Like if you're going to value the things that would make Harden the choice, like Kawhi is actually the more attractive candidate. He's on a better team. He too benefits from a system, but has actually won more games. He plays both sides of the ball. He's incredibly valuable to that offense, which like you look at the supporting cast that San Antonio has, and that might even be a worse roster than Houston, and they've outperformed them all year long. So like my issue with the Harden candidacy is that you just can't choose him and not choose Kawhi. And
you definitely can though, but hold on. You're forgetting that you picked Westbrook, bro. Like you need to make your case for the guy
you picked.
Hold up.
We're going to get to Russ. I also want to read Daryl Morey's tweet this week. I think it might have been this weekend. He said, AAU, All-Star Game, Draft Lottery, 2017 MVP race. Basketball is losing its focus on winning. Get the fuck out of here with that. Like, come on. Honestly, like, as someone who follows youth basketball, like, the AAU stuff was valid in, like, 2003. Look at the league right now. AAU culture is not hurting basketball. So that's number one. Number two, the All-Star game, like, I can't believe he seriously sent that tweet. And, it's got to be sincere, right? Like, this is, like, peak campaign season. No. He must have meant it. I don't think he was trolling, right?
No. I don't think he was trolling. I think this was a carefully crafted pitch to the people he thinks are the voters. Like, it really seems like it's one of these targeted messages that, like, a high-powered PR firm would come up when they're trying to, like, sell cigarettes to kids. You know, like, we have no shame. We're going to just cross every line. I think his view of the voters is, you know, 60-year-old beat guys who have, you know, grown weary over the last three decades. And, like, let's throw them some red meat so that they can get behind the Harden candidacy. That was my view of it.
I cannot believe that really happened. That's all I can say.
I'm not sure that's his real opinion. I think he's trying to dumb down to his audience and triple his dollars, in the words of Jay-Z.
like, we're really going to invoke the All-Star game? Nope. I don't know anybody that actually cares about the All-Star game being competitive or
not
being
competitive. Well,
yes, you do. All right, that's true.
Have you forgotten? Who are you talking to on this call right now?
I do know you. You're right.
I care more. All right, thank you. You know at least one person. I did have my freak out last year about that.
All right.
Look, just real quick on Harden versus Kawhi, though. Here's how I counter your argument.
Okay.
Kawhi has a very complete case as well. The playmaking aspect for his team is just not nearly on the same level as Westbrook or Harden. And then his usage, while sky high and certainly in like his biggest alpha season of his career, is definitely a major cut behind both Westbrook and Harden as well. So it basically kind of comes down to his offensive role, the scope of it. His numbers are strong. His team performance is strong. You know, all the other things about making people better, I think, apply to him as well. To me, the difference between those two guys comes down to how much they do for their entire team's offense.
Yeah.
And Westbrook and Harden are just operating on an insane level when it comes to usage and role this season, something that we haven't even really seen from, like, peak LeBron. And so to me, that's why those two guys had to be the top two candidates this year.
Okay. Well, we disagree on that. I think Kawhi is in the same conversation because of everything he does. It, like, usage-wise, he may not be in the same category as those guys, but he really has anchored that offense, which I think just unfortunately has gotten discounted as everyone talks about how much his defense should matter. Like, his offense has been super dependable for six straight months, and he's closing games for them. And given how successful the Spurs have been, like, that should matter in the race. However, as I got down to Kawhi and Russ, I mean, I was prepared to vote for Kawhi as late as like Sunday afternoon. And
so, just to be clear, you're not even going to have Harden in your top two?
No.
Oh my God.
Look, Harden is incredible, and his value will be reflected in the first round of the playoffs. That's fine. But if we're talking about the regular season, like, it's not my fault that this is the most competitive MVP race we've seen like this millennium. Okay. I'm not trying to knock Harden. He's been awesome, but I just would choose Kawhi.
Yeah. But it is your fault that you're reaching the wrong conclusions, but go ahead. Continue with your case for Westbrook, because that's what the people really want to hear, Andrew.
All right, fair enough. It's time to address the elephant in the room, the big angry elephant. I have been a pretty vocal Westbrook skeptic, as listeners of this podcast will know. Even this morning, I was on the phone with someone who I go to Wizards games with, and he's older. He's like an uncle figure. And he started talking about how incredible Russ's triple-doubles are, and how nobody has done this in the last 30 years. And I got upset all over again, because Russ should not win because of the triple doubles. Like, Harden's numbers are just as impressive. And if anything, I think like the Westbrook triple doubles are misleading. I mean, he's the most selfish player I've seen since Kobe. And if anything, like, it's more insidious because his stats imply that he's not. Like, I at least appreciate that Kobe was a transparent gunner in like 2007 or whatever that one year was. And so I don't think that Russ is a better player than Harden. I don't think that he's better than Kawhi. However, Russ wins, man. I watched the Nuggets game. I went back and watched the end of the Nuggets game yesterday, and he's just been too ridiculous. It's just, at some point, like, I give up. Like, every fourth quarter, like, it looks like he's out of it. I will send you a snarky text message, and he just does something incredible. And at some point, we have to recognize that this is taken on a life of its own.
Okay, that leading off with he's the most selfish player since Kobe was a really dramatic turn for your argument.
Well, no,
that I didn't see coming.
Here, I had to acknowledge that, look, I have some misgivings about this. Russ is not a perfect player. But my thing is, like, basketball is the best sport on earth, because there are times when guys can just take over and sort of inspire disbelief and capture our imagination. And look, like, Russ is doing that. Like, that's the reason basketball is cool, is because of stuff that Russell Westbrook is doing this year. It's sort of like become like its own spectacle, and everyone who cares about this sport has been hypnotized by Russ all year long. And like, that should matter in this discussion, especially if everything else is equal between all the candidates. Give it to the guy who is just like blowing people's mind every night.
Yeah, but everything else isn't equal. I mean, his team is significantly worse. I mean, they're dropping games to the Phoenix Suns by 21 points, where he's shooting 6 for 25, and everybody wants to forget it because he's going to come back the next night and go with 50. I mean, I get that, but there's got to be a consistency factor. When you look at their play against the best teams, I mean, not even just head-to-head against the Rockets, but if you look at how many times they've been just completely non-competitive against the Warriors and some of the other league's teams, I mean, it's really fun. I enjoy the Westbrook experience as much as you do, and I think I hate on Westbrook significantly less than you do.
Uh-huh.
But it's just hard to wrap your mind around the idea you're going to reward a guy for having a good team who was not at all competitive against the league's best in the aggregate.
Sure, but
I mean, to me, that's really tough. And he's got talent on that roster. People love to downgrade that roster. But to me, and we're going to talk about this later. I mean, a guy like Andre Roberson, defensive player of the year candidate. Right. Steven Adams, very good center. Victor Oladipo, as you mentioned on the podcast previously, similar numbers to a guy like Eric Gordon. If he really was as valuable as his own usage rate and crazy advanced stats suggest, I feel like it would translate to more wins. That is a hard hurdle to get over. If Harden and the Rockets, let's say that they hadn't cracked 50, I think it would be a much more level playing field between those two. And I think that that would really open the door up for Kawhi to kind of have the best player on an excellent team argument that you're trying to make as well. But I'm just not sure we can give Westbrook credit for all of these stats under the guise of value. You know, I think that some of this value is inflated.
Yeah, that's true. But I also think that basketball isn't just about strict technical value, and I don't think it should be. Like, if you want to focus on who's the most efficient or who's technically the most valuable or who's creating exactly the most wins, like, go watch baseball. Like, some of this stuff is specific to basketball. Like, he's capturing people's imaginations. That shit matters. And I'm saying this as someone who has been skeptical constantly and just watched him come up huge month after month, like week after week, of especially down the stretch. He's you have to at least concede that he has outplayed James Harden over the last 6 weeks. Like,
there's no question about that. But I also think Harden deserves significant credit for capturing the imagination. Now, it might not be for the casual viewer, but I think the intelligent NBA viewer who looks at the Rockets' three-point shooting pace, and right, looks at the way they've changed just the entire approach on offense, having guys step back well behind the three-point line, that understand how many times Harden goes into those pick-and-roll scenarios and how many different ways he can beat you, whether it's with his own scoring, whether it's getting to the free-throw line, lobs to Capella, cross-court passes to shooters, kick out to other shooters on the near side. I mean, this guy is a captivating player, too. I agree. His game is kind of junky. Like, there's no doubt if I had to watch one guy play, I would pick Westbrook. If there's one guy who's more captivating, I would pick Westbrook.
Yeah.
But what they're doing as a team is far more captivating than 21-point losses to Phoenix, which are ugly. And that's not just to cherry-pick one game. I mean, Oklahoma City has kind of been this boomer-bust team all season long. They haven't had that same level of consistency as a strong team. And
well, and I want to ask you, though,
court a lot.
If it were a vacuum, if Sam Presti and Daryl Morey were both fired tomorrow, which team? Daryl Morey fired for his ridiculous AAU MVP race take. Which roster would you want to take over right now?
No question, it's Houston's, because, like, as we've talked about, they've put more years into this. They had a head start, and I'm going to grant that, because I don't think that past seasons or future seasons should be major factors when we're looking at this. I'm trying to keep this as only an evaluation of an 82-game sample, and if you're saying you've got James Harden plus four shooters and multiple perimeter defenders who can kind of keep yourself honest, and you're going to have all those guys stay healthy, which is what's happened this season, yes, he has had a benefit there. There's no question.
Okay,
but look,
because that's what
I don't hold teams against guys. I mean, otherwise, you know, maybe Steph doesn't win the MVP in 2015. Like, I think that team success is something that you should consider strongly when you're weighing this, because it's a reflection of a team's best player if they win a lot of games.
All right, that's totally fair. I would just say that as I've heard people talk through Harden and Westbrook, people constantly mention that the Rockets were pegged for 41 wins, true, and then exceeded that by 10 wins or 13 wins or whatever it's going to end up being, and then mentioned that the Thunder were pegged for like 45 or 46 wins, and that's about where they are. That's true, but like, it's not to say that the rosters are really that uneven. Like, people, Vegas was pricing in a psychotic Russell Westbrook season to the OKC over-under. And people, at the same time, Vegas was pricing in a I-don't-really-give-a-shit version of James Harden that we saw in Houston last year. And it turns out, James Harden gives a shit again. So, good for him. He's one of the five best players in the league again. And that's fantastic, and he belongs in this conversation. But I just think that, like, the way people have been parsing value from, like, strictly based on preseason expectations is not really fair.
I think it is to a degree. I mean, The numbers that I was using actually had the teams closer. Like, the Thunder weren't quite as high on the over-under that I was looking at for the preseason. So they were kind of on similar grounds coming into the year. But look, that stuff gets revised along the way. You know, as soon as Houston comes out to a hot start, all of a sudden people forget what they thought or expected in September. Oklahoma City maybe struggles a little bit more. It's more of the rocky road that people expected. Then that kind of changes your expectations. It's very difficult to go back to the preseason and really remember how you viewed these teams. And that's why, to me, guys like Harden and his coach, Mike D'Antoni, have got to be really considered strongly for these awards based on the value of their overachieving, because even really smart people who pored over it did not expect this season in any way, shape, or form. And it's not the main factor here. It shouldn't overwhelm things like individual statistics, advanced statistics, you know, other things of that nature. But the overachieving part of it should be considered, especially when the league's best team doesn't really have a strong MVP candidate because of injury circumstances.
Yeah, that's totally fair. I'm not going to lie. Like, the Rockets absolutely exceeded expectations. I just think that some of those pieces are more attractive than what Russ has been working with.
Okay, so the people want me to ask you a question, though.
Okay.
So you've been slandering Westbrook. You said he chased off Durant. Now he's kind of chased you into a circle, you know, chasing your own tail. Now you're picking him as the MVP. I mean, do you feel sort of like the Jason Chaffetz or the Paul Ryan of this MVP conversation, where like you're really trying to distance yourself from Trump for months, but then you just kind of come home to roost at the end because you think everybody else is going to pick him and you want to be on the winning team? I mean, isn't that what just happened here?
No punches pulled. I was not expecting that.
I've been saving that one for 12 hours.
That really, really hurts. Look, I do think that that still matters, but I also think that part of the only way that the MVP is actually important is for the way people will contextualize the regular season like 10 years from now. And I think that there's absolutely nothing wrong with recognizing that Kevin Durant left. I will always believe that part of that was that he wasn't interested in playing with Russell Westbrook anymore. But Kevin Durant left, and then Russell Westbrook just lost his mind. And I'm speaking as someone who never had any plans of voting for him and was forced to do so because he was just that good down the stretch. And like, I understand that people will say there's some recency bias there, but like, what else are we supposed to do? It's literally an MVP race, and Russ is finishing stronger than anyone. I'm not Sam Hinkie. I'm not going to like just watch the fourth quarter first and then to like go back to the first quarter of the year. Like, Russ has forced people to vote for him, and I don't think there's anything wrong with recognizing that this is one of the craziest individual seasons that we have ever seen.
There isn't anything wrong in acknowledging that, but I still think if you went through, like, say, day by day of the season and, okay, who is your MVP on each day? I mean, to me, I think, you know, Harden's going to wind up having, like, 60 to 65% of those days. I mean, there's no question Westbrook has closed better, and I actually think he started a little bit better early on individually. I mean, once we were first getting acclimated to the idea that he really was going to start averaging triple doubles, there was a lot of wow factor right out of the gate with him.
Right.
But to me, if you do zoom back to the full 82, it's still Harden. But look, it's really close. Okay. I'm making my passion case for Harden at one, but to me, Westbrook has made this very, very interesting. And, you know, a few bad losses here or there, if those were just wins, you know, I think it would be an even more compelling case. It just, to me, the gap with the team right now is sort of very difficult to overcome intellectually.
Okay.
Should we just talk about the rest of our MVP ballot real quick?
Yes. I think we've litigated this enough. Give me your top five.
Okay. So Harden 1, Westbrook 2, Kawhi 3, LeBron 4, Steph 5, and I feel like that's kind of the cliche ballot, maybe. Like, I think actually the cliche ballot's probably Westbrook 1, Harden 2, and then the rest how I described it. But, you know, with Steph, I had a hard time moving him up out of 5th just because for so much of the season, you know, I was looking at that as Durant's team. I think I would have had Durant no worse than 3rd and possibly 2nd had he stayed healthy. But, you know, to me, that's how I came down. How about you?
Similarly, I mean, I wish there were a way to recognize Steph more, because not only has he been just like preposterous over the last 6 weeks, but he also, I mean, he deserves credit for allowing Durant to transition as seamlessly as he did over the first couple months. But obviously, like, this is just, the ballot is just too loaded this year. So Steph, you're fifth. Mine would be Russ, number one. Two is Kawhi Leonard. Three is James Harden. Four is LeBron. And only because, like, I hear a lot of people say, like, we're going to look back and be shocked that LeBron didn't win more than four MVPs. But LeBron has all kinds of other accolades. Like, LeBron's going down as one of the two or three best players of all time. I think he's fine. I'm not too concerned about recognizing LeBron. And the Cavs, like, legitimately sucked for about 6 weeks recently, like, down the stretch. So I part of me is tempted to put Steph fourth and LeBron fifth, but I'm not going to troll that hard. And the only other thing I will say is that we should acknowledge that this is the worst year ever for the NBA to wait until June to announce the MVP results. Like, it's not a disaster because none of this actually matters, but it's truly a bummer that we're not going to find out.
Yeah, I kind of think there's going to be a strategic leak on that one. I don't even think it would be a troll move to have Steph over LeBron. I mean, consider Golden State's track record of greatness here. I mean, they're, you know, the most wins over a three-year span in NBA history.
Yeah.
The consistency factor, Steph's health factor, his scoring number is still good. He's still shooting 40% on threes on a ridiculous number. He still leads the league in raw plus minus. So he's got a really strong case. I mean, the KD thing just, you know, unfortunately complicated it kind of to an unnecessary degree. But the gap between the Warriors team success and everybody else is still super wide. And, you know, I wouldn't fault anyone who says Steph should be fourth over LeBron. I mean, it's a weird thing. There hasn't really been anybody arguing that really online that I've seen.
Yeah.
But I think it's a completely legitimate take based on Golden State's body work.
Yeah, I just think that there's sort of residual resentment for people who said that Steph was the best player in the world last year. And people are still very sensitive and still want to recognize that LeBron is the best player in the world. So if... to do that would sort of, like, it would screw with a lot of different people. But yeah, like you said, there is absolutely a case. But we should move on, and let's run through some of these other awards. And then I do have some all-NBA questions for you. The other thing is, have you actually filled out the ballot yet?
I haven't yet.
Okay, me neither. I'm not 100% set in stone on some of these, but... who do you have for, let's do most improved?
To me, it's Giannis. And let me just, can I list off a string of categories that he's improved in this year?
Please do.
And just tell me when you feel like I should stop. and by the way, this isn't just improvement, this is career highs.
Okay.
Points, rebounds, assists, steals, blocks, field goal percentage, three-point percentage, free throw attempts, minutes, player efficiency rating, win shares, usage, offensive rating, turnover percentage, true shooting percentage, and wins, team wins.
That's incredible.
That is every category that matters. I mean, I don't know what more you really want. And I mean, to contextualize that, obviously he made the leap from being very good or sort of a budding star to a bona fide franchise player, all-star starter. You don't see that very often for a guy at age 22. I mean, that is a massive jump. And to me, if we don't give this award to him, then just don't have the award.
Well, we should note that he led the Bucks in every single category that you mentioned. I think maybe there could be like a stray field goal percentage. Maybe Greg Monroe outshot him a little bit, but like points, blocks, steals, rebounds, assists, minutes, like he led them in every category. And like that Bucks team, another team where if you'd asked me in October, I was like, nah, that's a 10th seed. Like I have no idea what they're doing with that roster. And Giannis has been so good that he, number one, has stabilized them and it has sort of allowed them to survive the Jabari injury. He's helped transition with Chris Middleton, and he's also helped sort of like keep that defense to where it's competitive every night. And I would also say that the most impressive thing for me with Giannis is that he's made all this pretty routine. Like, anytime you look up and see that he had like 22, 9, 6, 4 blocks and 2 steals, you're just like, oh yeah, that's a Giannis game. Like, that's what it is. And nobody in October would have expected that, but he's just that good. And like you said, like, he entered the year as like a potential all-star. And what I wrote today was like, coming out of this season, I fully expect Giannis to be in like in the MVP conversation for a solid 10 years after this.
Yeah. And I mean, the injury factor kind of gets forgotten too, but you know, Middleton starting the season out.
Yeah.
And that was a devastating early season injury that kind of seemed like a killer. And then that transitioned straight into like no Jabari for the stretch run. And I mean, Giannis, like you're saying, was the rock, carried them through all of that. They've got a pretty sweet playoff seed to, you know, kind of show off. And when you're looking at other guys, you know, at that position in the conference, whether it's Paul George, Jimmy Butler, I mean, Giannis is right there on that level in terms of carrying his team and with a, you know, similar or lesser cast to those other guys. So I thought Giannis was going to be a lot better this year. He has even blown past that anticipated improvement. And I think this is a one-man field.
Well,
I think it would be a travesty if anybody voted for somebody.
All right,
him.
All right, hold on. Slow down. First of all, it's not a one-man field. Second of all, it's a little tough because nobody knows like what this award is supposed to be. And
yes, we do. It's Giannis.
All right, fine. Fair enough. I would have voted, if I had had a vote last year, I would have voted for Steph Curry as most improved because he was just like supernatural all of a sudden. The one thing I will say, I'm almost certainly voting for Giannis. But I did just remember that like Dion Waiters is a legitimate candidate for most improved player this year.
Here we go.
I don't know why you're laughing.
Freaking internet
not
strikes
joking.
Again.
I'm not joking. The internet. He's been really, really good for them. And he, I mean, like, he keyed their whole sort of second half renaissance. And it's fallen apart because of his sprained ankle.
Okay. Well, can I throw out some other candidates now that we're just putting, you know, crap on the wall?
Okay, sure.
Okay. My number two candidate is actually number two in overall win shares in the NBA this season. James Harden is first. Can you guess who's second? I could never have guessed this in a million years that he would be second.
Is it someone from the Sixers?
No, it's not.
Okay.
It's Rudy Gobert, Jazz center Rudy Gobert. I think he's got to be...
That is such a basketball Twitter pick for most improved.
So not only has he stayed healthy this year, which is obviously big, and continued to improve as, you know, arguably the league's best defensive player, and we'll get to that. Offensively, he has come a long way. I believe he's number one right now in offensive rating. Much better as a finisher. His percentages are way up. All of his advanced stats are way up across the board. On top of that, much like Giannis, he's been the backbone of a team that's gone through a bunch of injury issues. They've posted 50 wins, which is, you know, nothing to turn your nose up at, given, you know, the kind of tumultuous season that they've had.
Well, given how bad, like the Jazz are really pretty rough to watch on offense, and they've had tons of injuries. And Gobert is on my first team All NBA. He's been sort of the rock for them. I wouldn't pick him, and I shouldn't make too much fun of you pitching him for most improved. The only reason I wouldn't put him in that conversation is because I think like he was 80% of this player last year, certainly on defense, and he just couldn't stay healthy. And I don't think neither he nor Bradley Beal belongs in this conversation because I think the biggest change for them has been health.
Yeah, and I think he has developed quite a bit offensively.
Yeah,
and that's
kind of
why I
he
put
has.
Him in there. Because there are a lot of guys who are really good defensive one-way centers, right? But those are the guys who often wind up looking overpaid when they, you know, cash out in free agency, guys like Biyombo or Mahinmi or whoever, right?
Uh-huh.
And Gobert left those guys so far in the dust this season with his ability to become a real threat on offense. And you know, I still look at him as one of the biggest all-star snubs. I think he's right at the top of the list in terms of the most underrated players when you look at their team success. If they didn't have him, it's crazy to think about how screwed Utah would be. And that's why I put him in this conversation.
Okay.
But if you didn't like him being in this conversation, I think you're really not going to like my next pick.
Ooh, make it quick. We got a lot of categories to get through.
Okay, Isaiah Thomas, Boston.
That's fair. That's fair, man. He's on a whole different level this year. Again, like, who knows what this award is supposed to be? I think Giannis is incredible and deserves recognition, but I would totally buy Isaiah being in the mix there, especially from a noted, like, Isaiah hater such as yourself.
Yeah, I mean, it's tricky because the improvement has come on one side of the ball. But
here we go.
There's been a lot of improvement on that side of the ball. I mean, to go from sort of a 22-ish score to a 29-point score is a huge jump. To do it for an offense that's been pretty solid and is very, very reliant upon him to really flex in the fourth quarters as he has. It's not quite the Steph Curry jump that you're talking about last year, but it's sort of like the caffeine-free version of that,
yeah.
If you will. That's why I kind of had him in this mix. I mean, Boston is not where they are record-wise without him. And I do try to keep an eye towards that when I'm looking at this Most Improved Player Award, like trying to imagine where those teams would be without the improvement of that main player.
Yeah.
And to me, so much of Boston's ability to even compete for the one seed has been Isaiah's skills as a scorer, as a playmaker, as a guy who puts lots of pressure on a defense and sets up their three-point shooting attack.
Yeah, that's totally valid. I mean, he's been awesome. We're going to come back to the Celtics in a few minutes. So defensive player of the year, I think we both had Gobert, right? Just to circle back.
We did.
Okay.
I thought that was the toughest pick. I don't know. Did you feel the same way or no?
Yeah, and I kind of feel guilty because I feel like I'm penalizing Draymond because his team is so good. But I just, if you're talking about like strict value, again, Gobert has taken a team that would probably be like 7, 8, 9, 10 in the West without his defensive contributions, and he's got them like solidly in the mix to win 50 games. That's incredible. I also don't think that there's a more entertaining defender in the league right now. Like watching the ground that he covers and the way he just like tortures shooters, and he can stay with people on the perimeter too. He deserves some love, whereas Draymond is probably like technically as good as any defender in the league. But he's also, it's like Draymond's not suffering from like a lack of recognition and is going to probably lead the Warriors to another finals and probably another title. So I don't feel too guilty, but like the tiebreaker for me was basically Gobert's overall value.
So this was really a hard one for me. I liken in this race almost to the MVP in that to me, Draymond is the first defender I would select in a draft, very similar to like LeBron.
Uh-huh.
I think if you had to start a team with one defensive player and you didn't know who you were playing, you would just value Draymond's versatility, his competitive spirit.
Exactly.
And all the
yeah.
things we've talked about for Draymond forever. However, when I'm looking at like this year's body of work, I mean, I think last time I checked, Gobert was first in blocks, first in defensive real plus minus, first in defensive win shares, you know, right at the top of the list in terms of defensive rating and very close in defensive rebounds as well. And I keep going back to his impact on Utah's, you know, overall defensive scheme. Like, and they took away Derek Favors for a huge portion of the season. George Hill seemed like he was in and out of the lineup the whole time.
Yeah.
Hayward missed time. I mean, just go right down to Rodney Hood.
I mean, look,
it is so hard to
not
keep
only
an
that.
Elite defense.
Utah's rolling out like Joe Inglis and Boris Diaw and Trey Lyles, and they never really skip a beat, at least defensively, because Gobert is always right there, just sort of like torturing people.
And it's so hard to keep a defense elite when you don't have any continuity.
Yeah.
And to me, that just goes back to his value. And there's no question, again, Draymond closed very strong in this race, much like Westbrook in the MVP race. I mean, he's been ridiculous during Kevin Durant's absence. But, again, I'm looking at an 82-game sample. I mean, who did more with less? I mean, there's really no question that Gobert did more with less this season.
And yeah.
I agonized over this because, like I said, picking one guy to start a defense, I'd pick Draymond. And I wouldn't really think twice. And the Warriors did a nice job campaigning for him. I think it's actually going to pay off. I mean, they sent out a bunch of information. I mean, he leads the league in deflections. His plus-minus and on-off numbers, again, are gigantic, as always. His clutch defense, too, I think warrants mention. And they love bringing that up, much like the Thunder love bringing up Westbrook's clutch numbers. I mean, Draymond made a bunch of game-saving plays on, like, you know, deciding possessions this season. So I don't think Gobert would be snubbed if he doesn't win. But I do think he's just got the slightest of edges over Draymond.
Well, also, kind of the flip side of the conversation that we were having about LeBron, or that I was having with myself, like, and how LeBron's won four MVPs, like, he's fine. Draymond, it would be a crime if he doesn't come away with at least two or three Defensive Player of the Year awards from his prime. So whether that's this year or the next few years, like, at some point, he should be recognized. I think he lost out to Kawhi recently, correct?
In the last 2 years, he finished second to Kawhi.
Yeah, like, and that, it doesn't really matter, but he definitely deserves the recognition. The other side of the spectrum, though, like, there's nothing wrong with a little bit more perceived disrespect to fuel his resentment for the world. So either outcome is fine with me. Speaking of the Warriors, though, we should move to Sixth Man of the Year, because I think you got to vote for Iggy just based on how good the Warriors have been and how important he is to not only like what they've always done well, but how they've sort of kept it together over the final 2 months of the year without KD.
You're making too much sense, Andrew. You're supposed to be having
honestly,
bad opinions.
This
but
is
you,
what
but
happens.
You nailed it.
This is what happens when we pod twice a week for the entire year. Eventually, just a lot of Golliver rubs off on me. So I am going with Iguodala here over my spiritual choice, Lou Williams, or Eric Gordon, who's also been awesome. But I think you gotta, like Draymond, it would be a crime if Iguodala doesn't come away with a couple Sixth Man of the Year awards from this Warriors run.
Yeah, my ballot was one Iguodala, two Williams, three Gordon. I think, kind of going back almost to what I just said about Draymond in terms of he'd be the first defensive player I would select, if contenders were allowed to have their first pick of all the bench players in the league, you know, and you're trying to win a title this season, don't you think Iguodala would be the clear choice as the number one pick?
Yeah, Iguodala, then Bojan Bogdanović and Brandon Jennings. Yeah. It'd be tough, but I think you go Iggy.
Squeeze Trey Burke in there too, right?
Yeah.
Look, it's the playmaking, it's the unselfishness, it's really the basketball IQ, it's the defensive versatility. It shows up every single year in the insane on-off numbers when he's on the court. He's done just enough shooting this year to kind of keep himself as a threat. You know, that was an issue earlier in the season to me, is you know, his just sort of individual offense had taken such a huge backseat. I was wondering whether, you know, teams were going to be able to kind of cheat off of him when they go to sort of their death lineup. But he's done a little bit more to keep teams honest. He's just such a good passer and a conductor as well. You know, his game is not the same as Manu Ginobili, but I make the argument for him as a sixth man for much the same reasons as I often made it for Ginobili, which is, you know, his teams just blow out opposing benches when he's on the court.
Yeah.
And you always want him as part of your best five. Well, when you're, you know, trying to win a close game, even if he's not starting for you.
And look, the Warriors would be screwed without Iguodala. And
for
that's
sure.
True even going forward. The Warriors will be screwed if he starts to break down over the next few months. And that's one of the, I still think, the most underrated storyline of the finals last year was Iguodala's back seizing up and him sort of suddenly slowing down a little bit and allowing LeBron to get going. And so that it's something to watch. Anyways, he's Sixth Man of the Year. But let's run through, oh, you know what? Rookie of the Year. This is a case where I like to think that I rubbed off on you, because you chose Joel Embiid in Sports Illustrated's little like awards post today. Is that really going to be your vote?
It is, but it was almost a protest vote, because I'm really hung up on this idea of the Rising Stars Award, like to give it to the guys who are 22 and under. I just want to be done with the Rookie of the Year. I think it's a joke that we have to pick between a guy who basically played 31 games or a 24-year-old longtime or often backup point guard,
right,
Malcolm Brogdon. That is not reflective of anything. You know.
Well, hold on. What about Saric?
It's a waste. Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, inefficient volume score on a terrible team. I mean, I don't think there's an award for that. There shouldn't be an award for that.
Okay. Yeah. Well, look.
So I saw zero good candidates, and so I went with the guy who actually was good, even though he was really in his third year. And I'm not happy about it, and I want there to be a different award, one where I can choose between the likes of Giannis and Towns and Jokic and Porzingis and Miles Turner and Gary Harris as sort of the true rising star, the guys who are going to be, you know, future impact players in this league. I don't want this stray Rookie of the Year who can actually stay on the court for 2,000 minutes when they're, you know, 19 years old. It's just stupid.
You know what's great is that you really aren't happy about it. Like, I know I know that you're genuinely upset that you have to vote for Joel Embiid. And this is why you're so deserving as an award voter. You are straight up torn up about this. I think that
I'm not happy.
Embiid is a slam dunk choice to win this award.
Ooh.
In part because the rest of the class has been so underwhelming. And I mean, and I'm saying that as someone who really enjoys Dario's game and think like, I think as a sixth man for either the Sixers or some other team, he could be fantastic. And I also really like Brogdon. But come on, man. Like, nobody had a bigger impact on basketball than Joel Embiid this year. And no rookie. And history should reflect that. Again, it would be one thing if there were another rookie averaging like 20-8 and or like Jamal Murray was going off. But I think, and part of me, I want people to look back and remember that when he was healthy, Joel Embiid was so dominant that even for 30 games, he was more impressive than any other rookie. And
yeah, we're always going to have January.
Yeah, well, and look, he made the Sixers a legitimately good team. They were upsetting teams every other night for about 3 weeks straight. So it's not just like Twitter hype. Like, there was real value there, and he was truly one of the better rim protectors in the league and was incredible on offense as well. So I think there are I've heard a lot of different NBA people express misgivings about voting for someone who was only playing 30 games. And like, just relax. The rookie of the year is not that important. And literally,
look, the last thing I wanted to do was violate the maxim, you know, the first ability is availability,
right,
when it came to this voting. And I only do that because I was pushed to the brink with no other candidates. I mean, Embiid basically averaged twice as much as Brogdon. He shot 40% on threes. He had Philadelphia with him on the court was not that far from being a 500 team.
Yeah.
His defensive rating was 99. His impact was similar to guys like Rudy Gobert when he was on the court. He led all rookies in player efficiency rating, guys who played at least 300 minutes. I mean, he's got a very nice statistical portfolio, even though it's missing like the final six chapters of the book.
I'm really, really proud of you, and I appreciate it. That was a nice olive branch to me.
You're well. Yeah, I'll give you credit for that one. I mean, I didn't want to do it. It was like the most begrudging pick ever. It was so begrudging, I wanted to change the award because I didn't want to hand it out.
Right. I still think we should change the award, but we can come back to that later. All right. Two more categories here. Coach of the year.
I went D'Antoni 1, Pop 2, Brooks 3, and there were so many candidates. I mean, I was like in my little blurb for the website, I was making arguments for Spoelstra and Brad Stevens and Quinn Snyder, you know, and all these different guys. Ultimately, what it came down to for me was which was the most surprising, which was the least foreseeable. And then, you know, among that, how much credit did I give to the coach for, you know, driving that? Mm-hmm. And I kind of parsed it, and it's like, D'Antoni, I never saw it coming with Houston. And it was a perfect fit for the pieces he was given. It was a very smart design by their front office. But they could have gone a lot of different ways with that coaching hire. And I think that, you know, this season was like strong validation for what he's doing.
It's
in terms of Pop.
There were rumors that the D'Antoni hire was not entirely Maury's decision.
Yeah, well, that's one that you take credit for as soon as it goes well, though.
Yeah, no kidding. Well, you know what's interesting, though, with Coach of the Year? It's kind of a curse, isn't it? Because like the only coaches who ever excel enough to actually win this award are guys who have overachieved with kind of an average roster, and that generally means there's like a regression coming. So I kind of feel bad about voting for D'Antoni, but based on all that you laid out there and just how well this roster has played this year, like, he should win it.
Yeah, the deciding thing for me, and I keep going back to their offense in terms of it being historic, but to have one all-star and to have potentially a top 10 offense,
yeah,
is truly insane. I mean, they're going almost basket for basket, efficiency point for efficiency point with the Warriors, who everybody has derided all season long for being like a loaded AAU team to an unfair degree, right?
Right.
So
There we go again. AAU culture. Yeah. Sorry, Daryl Morey.
Exactly. So I just like these guys as an antidote to the I'm getting mine generation, because they're getting theirs. You know, it's like we're getting ours.
God.
Is really the Rockets' approach.
You are the worst. Go rant about modern society with Daryl Morey. All right, so you had Pop. You know who else is not getting enough love is Brad Stevens. I understand that people are kind of like worn out with some of the Brad Stevens worship, but like that Celtics team is really not that great when you look at some of the parts on their own. And I think Brad Stevens deserves some credit for how well Isaiah has played this year.
He definitely
they're going to finish with the best record in the East. Like it looks like, I mean, who knows what could happen in the East over the next two nights, but it's looking like they're going to finish with the top seed. And I don't know. I don't know if Brad Stevens is ever going to do enough like with that team to validate some of the hype that has surrounded him over the past few years and actually win this award. But like, he's been incredible, man.
Yeah, it was just hard for me to reward a coach in the minor league. You know, if he ever makes it to the Western Conference, you know, I'll give him a little more consideration.
Okay.
But yeah, being first in the minor leagues, you know, it's fine.
Sure.
It's good.
Sure. Well, I didn't want to vote for Scott Brooks because I didn't want to jinx him before the playoffs. So well, it's like a real tortured Wizards fan bias there.
Well, that's the best part about this Coach of the Year award, though, is there's so much backfire potential for all these guys. Like, yeah. Brad Stevens could easily, they could lose in the first round, blow up in his face. Brooks, same thing. D'Antoni, let's be honest, same thing. And the Spurs have not exactly raced to the end. I mean, I think they're going to handle their first round series for sure, but there's been some chop there, and they've got a lot of guys you can pick on in the playoffs. So Popovich is going to have his hands full as well. But we should also probably mention Steve Kerr here too. I know he's got the most ridiculous roster, but he's going to win 65 plus games in each of his first three seasons as coach. That's insane. And yeah. His first 3 years as a coach, the first 3 years on the job, are the most successful 3 years any organization has ever had in the NBA. That's got to be at least something to do with coaching. And by the way, he created the offensive system and the culture that attracted a guy like Kevin Durant. Like, he gets credit for that. So I'm not saying he should even be in the top three this year, because it was a pretty deep field of Coach of the Year candidates, but we should probably give Kerr a little bit of love.
Well, speaking of credit for Kevin Durant, Executive of the Year, and then we can run through it all NBA. Who do you have?
It's Bob Myers. I mean, that's no brainer.
All right. So can I feel okay picking him? Because I'm
oh, yeah. Dude.
Yeah. I honestly, like, I haven't really like dug into it yet. I think Daryl Morey does deserve credit for how well Houston has sort of transitioned this year and bounced back. The other guy I was thinking of is Pat Riley for not paying Dwayne Wade and replacing him with like $2 million of Deion Waiters and James Johnson. But I think you got to give it to Bob Myers.
I think I'd go Bob Myers 1, Morey 2. And I'm saying that with the complete acknowledgement that when Ryan Anderson and Eric Gordon break down next year, I'm going to slam him for those contracts.
that's my reluctance with Morey. Dead serious. I thought about it, and I was like, you know what, man? I don't think we should get too excited about the Ryan Anderson deal after this season. Like, give it a couple years before we grade that one.
Yeah, and the other ones that I would really consider, it either be, you know, Dennis Lindsay in Utah. I think he did a phenomenal job last summer. Not everything has worked. I mean, Diaw is pretty washed at this point, and they've had a bunch of injury issues to guys he added, but he made the right kind of additions to kind of to get them, you know, over the hump that they've been trying to get over for quite a while.
Yeah.
And then I would also look at Masai Ujiri in Toronto. I just think that dude is really good at his job.
Ooh.
I loved his midseason moves. Their season definitely could have gotten away from them. Like, if they had pulled a Boston, sat on their hands during the trade deadline, like a bunch of people who were willing to play for bronze instead of going for gold, and Lowry goes down, their season is in shambles.
Yeah.
I mean, they're not going to be able to defend well enough. You look at the price he paid for his midseason additions and just how well he's constructed that overall roster. You know, I think he's, you know, probably in that mix as well. It's tough. I have four guys for three spots, and I don't want to snub any of them, but I think ultimately Like, don't overthink it. You got to give it to Myers. Because it wasn't just adding Durant. I mean, there was a lot of calculations involved in terms of who could be let go, who was expendable, who wasn't expendable. How do they, get rotation minutes after, out of guys like McCaw? How do they pick up a Matt Barnes at the last minute when Durant goes down? I mean, he was busy all season long.
Yeah.
And, their record reflects excellent management.
Yeah, I agree. And it's also just, like, so bold and crazy that they pulled that off, that I have no problem recognizing that. Although Masai is a really compelling alternative, so I'm not sure actually where I'll fall on that spectrum. And again, Daryl Morey does deserve credit for this year, and I think it would be hilarious to recognize Pat Riley for not caving to Dwayne Wade's demands, but I probably don't have the strength to do that. But yeah, man, it's tough. Dennis Lindsay getting it as sort of like a 3-year like career achievement award would be pretty solid as well.
Yeah, that would be a real tough curse for him, though, because what if Hayward leaves,
That's true, that's true.
Congratulations, all your painstaking work has resulted in utter heartbreak.
Yeah, well, Coach of the Year and Executive of the Year are always a little dicey in terms of what they portend. But let's run through all NBA real quick. I'm sure we agree on almost everything. We've actually agreed to like a shocking degree on this podcast. That's why
I broke it up halfway through and called you Jason Chave. It's just for a little drama, because like otherwise it was going to be an hour and a half of us repeating our own opinions back to each other.
Yeah.
But
all right.
First team, where do you disagree? I've got Westbrook, Harden, LeBron, Kawhi, and Gobert. Are we 5 for 5?
Wow, we are 5 for 5. Feeling good. I'm glad that someone else is with me on the Gobert choice, because I think like he's just been too ridiculous. And here's my real take on this, is that if the NBA is going to tie these all NBA teams to salaries, then they really need to eliminate the center position and maybe positions altogether, because Gobert, I'm saying this as someone who actually really likes Gobert and thinks he's been incredible this year, but like he does not belong on the first team All NBA, and neither would any other center.
DeAndre Jordan. Yeah, neither did DeAndre Jordan last year.
Yeah.
I mean, it should match the All Star ballot, in my opinion. It should be 2 guards and 3 front courts.
Yeah.
And if that was the case, I mean, I would probably slide in Draymond. I'd probably look at it as a first team. I mean, there'd be some other arguments you could make for various guys, but under this format, I think Gobert is the right pick.
Okay. Second team.
I went Steph Curry. I went John Wall. We didn't say this, but my sixth pick for MVP after Curry would have been Wall. He would have been my first honorable mention.
Okay. Thank you for that.
From there, I went Jimmy Butler and Draymond at the forward spots. And then I put Anthony Davis as the second team center, because he played more minutes at center than forward. Are you laughing because we have the same 5?
Dude, this is ridiculous. Honestly, we may have to scale back to 1 pod per week, because I think we're beginning to have the same brain. But yeah, look, that's my second team. I feel great about throwing Draymond in there, because he's been that good and he's that level of player. Anthony Davis, I kind of feel weird about putting him there, but it is what it is.
Yeah, I don't love putting guys who are on below 500 teams on the All-NBA. So I tried as hard as I could to kind of find a different argument, but
you know what else I wish? I wish that All-NBA did not have to reflect this season. Like, I wish that we could just say, all right, well, every April, we're going to come up with 3 All-NBA teams that are just going to be a reflection of who voters think are the best players in basketball.
We have that, dude. It's called the Top 100. We do it every year in September.
Okay, sure. Absolutely. The SI Top 100 does fill that role for right now, but at some point, I would be more excited to vote for that than just a reflection of who had the best year. But yeah, screw it. If we have to have a center position, throw Anthony Davis on there. I still am partial to Cat in that debate, but it is what it is. Brow continues to do like incredible things on a nightly basis for an awful Pelicans team. What about third team All NBA?
So third team, I put Isaiah, I put Chris Paul, I put Giannis, I put KD, and I put Marc Gasol.
All right. Well, hey, we finally have a couple disagreements. I have Giannis, Durant, and Isaiah. I have DeAndre Jordan because I feel like he, as much as CP3, like actually more so than CP3 or Blake, has stabilized that Clippers team and allowed them to sort of continue. I mean, it's weird. Like the whole Clippers season is strange to me because they are still a very good team, and it seems like everyone associated with that team is miserable, and it seems like every basketball fan has like silently agreed to not really care about them this year, but they still deserve credit for another, I think they're going to be the fourth or fifth seed in the West, and DeAndre has been awesome for them this entire season.
For sure. So here's how I came down on it. I didn't think the Clippers deserved two representatives because they had a good season, not a great season. When I looked at, you know, the Clippers record with Chris and how they perform with Chris, it's just off the charts still. I mean, he's among the league leaders in a lot of advanced stats. Clearly, he missed a lot of time. But, you know, DeAndre's still in a lot of situations, you know, late in games. You know, he's got to come out because of the free throws. He was definitely their most stable factor just because he was the healthiest of those stars. But I think Chris still had a bigger impact when he was on the court in terms of directing things. I like Chris's all-around game, offense and defense. When I was looking at him compared to, you know, other candidates, I think, you know, Lowry missed a similar number of games. I thought Chris was just a hair better than Lowry when both were healthy and a bigger impact. You know, Damian Lillard didn't win quite enough for him to sneak on and take one of those third team spots for me. And then also I thought, you know, for DeAndre, you know, there was another good candidate in Marc Gasol. I mean, his numbers aren't going to jump off the page, but, you know, Marc Gasol's leading a much better defense than the Clippers have had. The Clippers' defense has kind of been mediocre this season. Marc Gasol has a much bigger offensive role than DeAndre does. He's got a career high in scoring this year, and he's really added the three-point shot to his game as well, which I think is big, and keeping Memphis kind of with their head above water. And he had, you know, reasonably good health as well this year. So I thought Mark overall had a more compelling case. I just couldn't justify putting two Clippers on when so few teams had multiple representatives. Like, I didn't have multiple reps for the Cavs or the Raptors, you know, so it just kind of didn't seem fair to, like, you know,
all right,
throw this random 4 or 5 seed in the West getting multiple guys. So that's why I came down with Paul. But I didn't love it because I don't like guys who missed 20 games being on these because it feels unfair to the guys who held up for 75-plus games. But in both the cases of Chris and Durant, I felt like they were so good when they were healthy, they couldn't be snubbed.
All right. Let's talk about where you're wrongest there. The answer to the second guard spot on the third team All-NBA is DeMar DeRozan, okay? And it's really nice because it feels to me like the regular season is coming full circle here. Like, we began the year with you irrationally hating on DeRozan, and now we're ending it with you.
It's not irrational or hate.
You did not even mention him as a potential candidate for the third team All-NBA. And look, he's been awesome all year for them. And I understand that people don't like his game. It doesn't fit with where the league is going right now, whatever. But he has carried that team to a really solid season, kept them afloat without Kyle Lowry, and continues to be one of the better closers in the NBA. So he's my pick. I feel weird as someone who's, like, for the last 5 years, will fight anyone who says that Chris Paul isn't, like, incredible. I feel weird leaving him off the All-NBA teams. But like you said, availability is the best ability. And DeMar DeRozan played for 6 months at, like, an extremely high level. And I think he deserves it.
That was actually a really strong case. I don't even feel the need to like, you didn't say anything that outraged me, which is shocking.
Nice.
I mean, he was on my honorable mention. There's a lot of guards, you know. I mean, I think Lowry is right there. I mean, certainly you can make the case, okay, DeRozan was healthier, he should be above Lowry. Lillard has had a really strong last, you know, 2.5 months. By the way, I was at his 59-point game in Portland. I saw history, witnessed history, the most points in Blazers history on Saturday night. Just, you know, torching poor Shelvin Mack.
yeah, it was pretty solid. I wish I had seen that game. I was pretty jealous that you were in the arena for that one. Can I also mention that as you talk about all the different guys who could be on this team, the third team is where it really gets messed up that the NBA forces us to have a center here. Because
100%.
Like, I mean, this is really going to impact the Gordon Hayward contract situation, the Paul George situation. I would and part of me wishes you could just put Giannis at center and solve it that way, but I don't think we can. I haven't looked yet. Have you?
Yeah, I mean, just to be clear, like if we were just doing no centers, I don't know. I think Gobert would probably make my third team.
Yeah,
but you know, there'd be multiple other spots for forwards to sneak on it, and guys who are getting snubbed, you know, like you said, Paul George and Gordon Hayward. I mean, there's tens of millions of dollars at stake for those guys, and that's tough. Hey, who else did you have for honorable mentions? I mean, guys we didn't name: Jokic, Towns, DeMarcus Cousins. I mean, did you have any of those guys in the mix?
No, because all three of them are going to miss the playoffs, and like when it's this competitive. I'm not a big, like, you have to win games to be considered good guy, but when it's this competitive, I do feel like acknowledging that DeAndre Jordan is on a better team than any of them should matter, and that's also where I came down on the DeAndre Marcus Gasol spectrum. So, I mean...
So then help me feel better about one pick then.
Because, okay, what?
I mean, Anthony Davis is the guy who sticks out here. You know, he's like the guy on the losing team. He fits a lot of the similar things you could argue against guys like Jokic, Towns, and Cousins. Once again, huge numbers, but questionable impact on winning. Why is it that we give him a pass? Because we both gave him a pass and put him on the second team, and we don't give anybody else a pass. Is that just kind of hypocrisy on our part, or is there really something different about him?
No. You know what? The reason I feel okay about it is because it goes back to when I was saying what I wish all NBA would be, where it's just a reflection of who we think are the best basketball players. And I think Anthony Davis, still, regardless of what has happened to the Pelicans, he still belongs in that conversation. And I have no problem with him being recognized as one of the most freakish players in the league who's consistently great, regardless of what the Pelicans did. And frankly, like, The other center candidates just aren't that inspiring.
Yeah, so here is one way I justified it. First of all, he had by far his healthiest season. So that was always a knock that I used against him. He answered that question. And I also tried to think, okay, let's go back to October, November, December, when that team was truly pathetic.
Yeah.
If they didn't have Anthony Davis, they might not have won a game for 2.5 months. You know what I mean? Like, yeah. There's a pretty strong chance that they could have had one of those, like, insane, like, 35-game losing streaks, sort of like the Sixers had that one year. I mean, the guys they were trotting out there before Holiday came back, I mean, it was it was worse than these zombie Lakers. You know
people
what I mean?
Don't even realize quite how barren that roster is. I mean, they are so bad that they've been really counting on Solomon Hill to, like, an amazing degree this year. And it's rough, man. I'm not exactly sure where things went wrong, like how many years ago the Pelicans just took like a really dark turn. But even over the summer, there was a little hope that maybe they had upgraded things. But I don't know, man. It's tough. And that's a topic for like another podcast. But I still have no idea what they will do with Boogie this summer.
Yeah. Okay, so that's how we explain it for everybody who wants to know. Okay, you guys are hypocrites. You just give Davis a pass. There are reasons.
Yeah.
We have reasons.
He's basically Joel Embiid to the Pelicans, and he's made them reasonably competitive when they really have no business being like outside the top, the bottom three.
Yeah. Well, there wasn't a ton of drama. I mean, one of the harder ones was Giannis. I mean, second team or third team for me. I think leaving Paul George off was tricky. But Butler was just had better advanced stats and I thought was a more consistent player over the course of the season.
Yeah.
How about you?
Yeah. Jimmy Butler has been better for 6 months, whereas Paul George, it's actually been fun to watch. Like for the past month, he now realizes that he needs to make all NBA and in order to get that extra like $40 million. And he's been awesome, but he just was like kind of checked out for like on and off for the first 4 or 5 months of the season. And I think it would also be more fun for the league if Indiana couldn't pay him that and he left. But in general, that's not, just for in case anyone's listening, that's not why I'm voting for Jimmy Butler. I think Jimmy Butler has just been better across the board. So
just the headline here is NBA official NBA voter.
Chill. chill.
Lee snubs Paul George for free agency possibilities. Yeah, is basically what you just said.
Like you said, the advanced stats support Jimmy Butler. Anyways, if anyone has made it to the end of this podcast, please send us some mailbag questions with additional awards for this season. Like, I was honestly too lazy to come up with any like joke awards, but if you have any nominations, hit us up. And if you have playoff questions, we on Thursday afternoon are going to run a playoff preview / mailbag. So we will have a lot to run through then. And until then, I'm proud of us for mostly agreeing. I'm happy for the pod that we both have a vote. I'm really proud of you for tricking me into thinking that you didn't have a vote, and I look forward to the playoffs now.
I've been gleeful for the last 3 weeks just planning to spring this on you. And
it's
amazing. My original plan was I was going to drag it out for longer, but I just got, I just shot my shot as soon as this podcast opened. Like, I couldn't hold it in any longer.
Yeah.
So, anyway, well, Andrew, it's been great talking to you. I just want everyone to know, 5-star reviews on iTunes. It's the coolest thing. It's the new wave. All the kids are doing it. Andrew, I will preview the playoffs with you in a couple days. We made it to the end of the season. I'm very proud of us.
Absolutely. Success for everyone. I will talk to you soon, man.
Another great edition of Open Floor is in the books. Did you know Locked On has a daily podcast for all 30 NBA teams? If you're a Lakers fan, search Locked On Lakers. A Celtics fan, search Locked On Celtics. Warriors fans, search Locked On Warriors. Yes, all 30 NBA teams have a daily bite-sized podcast on the Locked On Podcast Network. Search on Apple Podcasts or Google Podcasts for Locked On, your favorite team. Or tell your smart speaker to play podcast Locked On, your favorite team.
It's the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.